702. Change your mindset.
Michael Lee is my guest this evening, multiple TEDx speaker, and we're going to be talking about why adaptability has been named the top skill for work this year. Mike, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate your time.
Hey, Aubrey. Nice to hear you again.
So adaptability has been named the top skill for work this year by whom and why?
Well, by LinkedIn, the article out called Adaptability is the Skill of the Year 2024. To explain why, there's a whole article about, you know, why it's the most important skill. But what's an interesting quote, I think, is from the vice president of LinkedIn. His name is Anish Raman. And he said, the skills needed to do your job will change. He says 65% by 2030. And adaptability is the best way to have control of things for yourself right now.
What does that mean, adaptability?
Things are changing so fast.
I was going to ask, what is adaptability?
I mean, look, there's many ways to define it. As usual, I define it a little differently than most people. But I mean, the general way to define adaptability means the ability to adapt, right? The ability to shift the way you think, act, be. And for me, the focus is on being, because adaptability really is the source of the other parts of that chain. Like, adaptability is how you be, is how you are, you know? And so you need to be able to be a different person all the time in order to confront the issues that you're dealing with and change according to the flow of, you know, like, I mean, just to give an example, we deal with AI a year ago was not a thing at all, barely, right? It just, ChatGPT had launched just a couple months before a year ago. And nobody knew it before that. Now suddenly the entire way, you know, web designers have kind of become irrelevant, or people writing certain kinds of, copy for things that you don't need them anymore all of a sudden. So, you know, the trucks drivers will become obsolete in a few years because trucks will drive themselves and they'll do so safely. There's no need for that job. So you have to adapt to change the skills you need in order to, you know, it's kind of the ultimate skill, because it's a skill that helps you be able to unlearn and relearn other skills.
Yeah. It suggests that we may be in a norm where we are stuck in our ways, and that in itself is something that we need to unlearn in order to be relevant in the near future. It suggests that we have as a reality a way of being that is so set in its ways that can be an existential problem going forward.
Well, it's a natural human thing, I think. You know, we spend a lot of time investing in learning how to be how we are, right? We start as little kids and we start to learn things and we learn them, and then we decide, hey, that's cool, I get to be that person, and then we get really obsessed with it, we become kind of addicted to it, and then next thing we know, it's hard to change from it, right? So we've invested a lot of value into who we are. So it makes sense that it would be hard to change that too easily. But what's the skill? And the funny, there's two things about that, right? One thing's quite funny, because it was actually more than 50 years ago that a guy named Alvin Toffler wrote a book called Future Shock, in which he said, the world is changing so fast, there's so much technological change happening that people are getting sick. It's kind of like a burnout kind of thing 50 years ago. And he called the disease future shock, with the sort of shock of the future coming so fast. Now, the beautiful thing about that is that was 1 year before the internet was invented. So you can imagine the difference between how much was changing fast then and now. But already 50 years ago, he said adaptability was the skill of the future 50 years ago, and that it would need to within the next 10 to 20 years, which was still a long time ago, that adaptability would become more important than literacy. You'd have to be, you know, being able to unlearn and relearn was going to be more important than reading and writing as a way to succeed, right? So that's the one thing that's just like shocking to think that, yeah, it's something really important right now, but it's been really important for as long as we've been alive, actually. And as long as the internet's been around, it was already happening. So it's something that people need to use in work. But the other thing is, you know, the more adaptable you are in your personal life, I think it becomes easier to be happy. Because if you can adapt to, I don't know, I'd like to rush the audience into engagement with us here. Like, how can be more adaptable in your life, not just in your work? How can being more adaptable in your life, your work, or anywhere else make you a happier person, a more successful person, a healthier person, a less stressed person? You know, because if you can adapt to what's happening, then you won't get stressed.
And I've heard people say that intelligence, in fact, is the extent to which you are able to adapt to ever-changing situations in your life. So maybe let's ask the question on 011-883-0702. What is the one thing that you have found very hard to adapt to? Is it a particular skill? Is it a particular way of thinking? Is it a particular way of behaving that you have had to learn to adapt either to or away from, and maybe found it difficult, but have sort of gotten it under the knee. You have now adapted and you've sort of become a different and a new person because of that adaptation. I'd love to take those calls on 011-883-0702. Interesting what Michael Lee is saying, that it's becoming clearer that adaptability is going to become more desirable than having a skill. Is that what you said, Mike?
No, what I'm saying is that, it's the prediction was that it would be more desirable than literacy. But I was also saying that adaptability is like, it is kind of like the ultimate skill, because it's the skill of changing skills. Shedding one skill you don't need anymore and picking up another. And it's connected a lot to that rate of change, because things like the amount of information in the world used to double once every 100 years. When he wrote that book 50 years ago, it was doubling every year already. Now it doubles twice a day. So the amount of information is huge. You know, the skills you used to need, you know, to do your job for 30 years, now half of the skills you have will change within 2 years. The statistics are ominous, how fast things are shifting and how much, you know, you have to keep changing what you know in order to stay alive, you know, in work at least.
So really it sounds to me, Mike, as though, yeah, change is here to stay, and we need to be able to change with the times and the amount of information that's coming to us. The amount of the information that's coming to us is literally changing the world that we find ourselves in. Do we have a choice? In other words, I'm basically saying it appears to me that we don't have a choice. We've got to change.
Well, it was like you started off with that quote from ancient Greece.
Yeah.
Right? And nothing is more constant than change. And when you say, it's never going to change, the change is going to keep changing. But the question, I guess, is how fast can it keep speeding up? Because we've reached a point where it's, you know, the amount of information is speeding up so much. The durability of careers, I mean, Gen Z careers are much shorter than many, many more different jobs. You know, the idea that you could have one job for your whole life or one company you work for your whole life is something that our parents kind of had. And now that sounds ridiculous. You know, like the whole idea is ludicrous. You know, now 2 to 3 years is a long term for a lot of people that are younger. So it's just the question, I guess, that we can't, I can't fathom myself even, is how fast can it get? You know, there is what they call the singularity. It's a theoretical time in which artificial intelligence becomes smarter than us, that we are unable to keep up with change ourselves as humans. And that's kind of the point at which I guess we become irrelevant ourselves. Some people see that coming within 10 years. Some say it will never come. But I guess that's the part we want to also be worried about, is what would come to the point where we can't keep up with the change no matter what we've tried to do. But for now, at least, we're safe. We can definitely do it. We have to become more and more adaptable, meaning we have to hold on to things less and let them go more easily, you know? And again, that really applies as well at home. Imagine every time your wife gets upset at you, for example, you know, you're able to just go, hey, it's okay. You know, I'll do things your way. I don't have to hold on to my opinion.
Yeah.
It probably becomes a lot less conflict, right?
Yeah, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? You know?
Yes.
It's exactly. A question I've got to constantly ask myself. Give us a call, 011-883-0702. We're talking about adaptability, yeah? It appears that it might be actually a skill that is more desirable than literacy. And perhaps we need to have a conversation, Mike, about perhaps the literacy of or adaptability literacy is perhaps going to be a thing that's going to be on vogue in our various conversation, because that seems to be the reality, that we're going to have to find ways of reinventing ourselves based on the realities of our times, which are changing at amazing speeds. You talked about this idea of the singularity, where change can happen so fast that we can't keep up with it. Talk to me a little bit more about that. How does that look? What does that look like?
Well, it's a theoretical concept, right? The idea of that it's based around this idea of artificial intelligence becoming smarter than us. And the it's hard to explain because it's theoretical, and some people believe it doesn't exist at all, that we will continue to advance ahead of the speed of artificial intelligence. But there is a theoretical idea that as artificial intelligence gets smarter, because it generates information itself, so that the more information it generates, the harder it is for us to cope with that information. It's a bit like that movie, it was called Her, I think, from Spike Jones, where the guy fell in love with his artificial intelligence and had a relationship with her. And then she was simultaneously having relationships with thousands of other beings, including other artificial intelligence. And she found him trivial and boring because he couldn't keep up. So the point is that because we're generating more data all the time, and we have more data being generated now in a day than that existed yesterday. It's doubling more than every day. So that means most of that data is irrelevant. It's stuff like your fridge is measuring, you know, if you have an intelligent fridge, it's measuring the temperatures, and then it's storing that somewhere in the cloud. It doesn't matter. That's not useful information, but a lot of the information is useful. It becomes part of the body of data. And, you know, as humans, we can't keep up with all of that data, but an artificial intelligence can do it much faster. Therefore, the theory of the singularity is that there will become a point when significant data is too much for us to cope with. And our brains are limited by biology. Artificial intelligence is not. No one knows whether it exists or not, right? And if it does exist, we're in a lot of trouble very soon. But other people think it's as impossible, you know, as the idea that anything that our brain can build cannot be as smart as our brain, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if that.
I get the theoretical sort of logic behind it. I'm just not yet sure about the practicality of it. And I'm asking myself the question that somebody who lives in the deep rural somewhere, who's never even had an encounter with a computer or artificial intelligence, is probably going to be untouched by the fact that there's AI that is far more intelligent than human beings, because they probably aren't in the sphere of influence of AI. Is that a fair way of thinking?
And obviously the idea of the singularity we're talking about now, it's something that has been developed by intellectuals, primarily Western or, you know, European or American intellectuals, who are looking at the development of knowledge in, you know, a university context, in an urban context. So you're getting now into questions of what happens to the, you know, rest of the world that's not part of that,
yeah.
You know, when knowledge and intelligence is, and that is kind of, I guess, you know, it's the Luddite formula, I suppose, in a way, right? There's what happens when the technologically advanced segments of the world get into levels of needing to adapt. I mean, that's why we need to adapt it. If people who are, you know, listening to us talk right now are farmers, they still need to adapt in order to they've always needed to adapt, because the seasons change at will, and that, you know, they need to know a lot of skills. There was a documentary about farmers that I was helping script edit once a couple of years ago, and it was really interesting to see like the level of knowledge that these farmers actually had, just because they had to deal with nature over many years. Always changing, you know, things are always unpredictable. It's kind of like in a business. The business has been called the most creative act, because you constantly have to adapt the business. You constantly have to create new ways of approaching it. It's not like making a painting where you paint it once and then it's over. The business doesn't end. Once it ends, you know, businesses are never designed to end. You're not supposed to have it end. It's supposed to be sold to somebody else, but you're never supposed to have the business run out of gas. That's not the point of a business, right? So it's one of the most creative act that exists. And in order for it to survive over a long period of time, it needs to constantly adapt. So is it really, you know, is it really going to get us anywhere to think about people that are not part of it? It's an interesting question, because what happens to the people that are not part of the technological, you know, conversation that we're having, right, about this rate of change? Because the rate of change that's happening is not really happening, you know, at the same level in a rural area, because they don't even have electricity, say, in that area. You know, they don't have access to the internet, then of course the rate of change is not the same in their lives, right? Their lives aren't changing much at all. So how does that affect that? I don't know, because all of these kind of conversations are happening around the urban environment, around business that are, you know, so that's a very interesting question you're raising. But the most adaptable places historically were the, you know, farming environments, where you have to adapt to conditions that you have no control over.
Sure. And so maybe that adaptability is already functioning in their space. Let's talk to Thomas in Motswedi. Adaptability is the conversation we're having here. Have you been in a situation where you've been able to be conscious of your adaptability, of your adaptation to a particular situation? How well have you done? Are you perhaps in a situation where you're finding that you can't adapt? What are the impediments? Why can't you adapt? What is it about your thinking maybe that is stopping you from adapting? Give me a call. I'd like to hear your thoughts. Thomas is in Motswedi, in the Northwest. Hi, Bro Tom.
Good evening, Bro Ops. And thank you to Ausen Tati and your good self
for the
opportunity. Yeah, I've been listening to Dr. Magwekwe, different guests. So I'm being schooled. Yeah, but I was born in Mapetla Extension in Soweto.
Yeah.
And I studied at the University of Zululand, and then I came to work in the Northwest, you see.
Yeah.
So because I didn't want to become Johannesburg.
Yes.
And my learning there, you know, in Zululand, they have taught me a lot of things, because I met people from different countries, you know, not only South Africa.
Yeah.
So adaptation resonates with me, you know.
Yes.
My aunt was married in a village called Hopani.
Yes.
It's about 7 kilometers from Motswedi, where I live.
Yes.
So, and they were saying that I won't live long, because at my aunt's place they were using a pit toilet. So I just stayed there for 5 months, and I moved to Motswedi, because the house that I was renting had a toilet inside.
Yes.
So to me, adaptation to me it's enhanced by, of course, your upbringing. Mm-hmm. My father was born in Lebotwane. Probably you know it. It's not Makapanstad, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. We lived there for 2 years.
Yeah.
And then from there we came back to Johannesburg in 1970. We went there during power black, going Soweto. My father took us there. We came back to Soweto. I studied in Soweto until matric, and then I went to Zululand. And then from Zululand, I said, I'm going to the Northwest. I wanted to explore, you know? So I was able to adapt. And to me, adaptation means maturity, you know. It means maturity, and it means that you go beyond what people could refer to as limitations. You explore. And then you always hold the view that opportunities can come anyway, you do. So there was a guest that you were talking about who is traveling between Graaf-Reinet and I don't know, it's Johannesburg or Pretoria. You know, you were asking good questions and he was responding. So such that I agreed with him. In like Dr. Lee, your current guest, yes. You know, that in a nutshell, adaptation to me, it shows that you love your country, you are not province bound or culture bound or language bound or religion bound. You want to explore your country and you want to be of assistance, more especially if you live from Johannesburg. To come and live in Motswedi. Khosi Mangope asked me and his son, Kwena Mangope, he said, but Kwena said, I live in Santin and you come here to Motswedi. I said, I want to become the salt in the meat. I regard Motswedi.
Thomas, let me let you go, my brother. Thank you very much for your call. Curiosity, Mike, it appears that in order for us to be more and more adaptable and that and more comfortable with change, the lubrication of all of that is a curiosity. Talk to me about that.
Well, it's an interesting point. A curiosity is often thought of as the kind of driving force of creativity in the first place, because it's like the desire to know something, right? And it's kind of a driving force. But it's a driving force, I think, of humans, not necessarily more. It's hard to know, like, whether are we more curious than many other animals, you know? We are very curious creatures, but curiosity seems to drive a lot of animals too. And so it's an interesting balance, because there's different ways to define curiosity too. Some people define curiosity as the desire to get more solutions even when you have a good solution, right? So you have something that works, do you want to go farther? Or are you kind of lazy once you find a solution, right? Curiosity is kind of that pure desire to, so definitely adaptability is connected to it, but I'm not sure that they're as closely linked as that, in the sense that adaptability is really like a pure ability to shift, and it requires, it does not necessarily require curiosity. It requires a willingness to kind of go to the same place as curiosity does, you know, it requires a willingness to let go. It requires a willingness to not hold on to who I am. And so therefore, like, curiosity is, you know, if you're curious about what it would be like to be somebody else or, you know, what it would be like to do things differently, that curiosity could help you adapt. But I don't think it's necessary to be curious to adapt. Does it make sense?
Yeah. I hear you. Wongan Jinga says, interesting convo there. Here are the things that I can't keep up with at the moment. One. How fast one needs to keep up to date with skills and be relevant with the market and labor. 2, information overload. 3, losing a loved one, says Wongan Chinga. And I suppose all of these issues that he raises signify to me different requirements of him. So there's the very deep one that is about losing a loved one, that is about emotions, that is about connections being severed by death or maybe separation. It sounds very, very emotional. And then information overload has for me a sense that it's something that has to do with the intellect and the interpretation of the information that's coming at you at this awesome speed. And then he talks about how fast one needs to keep up to date with skills and be relevant with the market and labor. And that for me is about vocation, the ability to have a sense of predictability and the security that comes with that. So does that mean, Mike, that when we speak of adaptation, we need to be aware that it may be adaptation at many different levels of our awareness, of our consciousness as human beings?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it brings us back to the first really powerful use of the word adaptability. It is Charles Darwin, right? he said, you know, basically said, he didn't say it in exactly the words that we hear it in now when we think about it, but 150 years ago, he said that what makes human beings survive, that makes us the successful species, is not our intelligence, it's not any other skills, it is our ability to adapt. That's what made us succeed, right? And so really, like, when you apply it to all the different realms you just listed, you know, from different types of skills in order to succeed, to dealing with coping with too much information, to dealing with change in your life, somebody passes away. All of those things are coming back down to that same basic question of, am I willing to survive by changing myself, right? Rather than surviving by my wits, or, you know, the pure knowledge I have, or surviving by persistence of the same skill that I keep using until it works. The core skill of adaptability is, going back to your original quote, right? The skill of change. Can I change faster than what's around me, or at least as fast?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And the reason I quote Darwin about it is because he was basically saying, what made us the preeminent species that dominates the other species is that we adapt better than any other species. And we adapt better than other species, not because necessarily we are better at adapting per se, but it's because of our intelligence that allows us to come up with other ways to adapt our adaptability, right? So we're not only adaptable, we're adaptable about being adaptable, which is unique.
Yeah, I think there's certain viruses that could give us a run for our money these days.
Well, yeah, but they have a sole purpose. And, yeah. when we defeat them, then they die.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It takes us.
And if they defeat us, we die, right?
Well, so far so good, but I mean, not, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, you get my principle.
We're still standing.
Yeah, you get my thinking that so, and it brings me to this question. It appears that adaptability is a necessary component of survival. If the virus doesn't adapt faster than our ability to kill it, it dies, right?
Yeah.
If we don't adapt faster than the virus's ability to mutate, we die. It appears to me that adaptability is hardwired into the idea of survival?
You know, on the top left corner of my presentation deck in my one of my adaptability presentations, it says adapt or
die.
Die. Die. Adapt or die. Adapt or die is, you know, it's not the nicest phrase. I wouldn't necessarily use it as a slogan, but adapt or die is very accurate. The road is littered, right, with very famous cases of this. Blockbuster Video, right? We know the story. They thought Netflix was a silly idea, and they did not want to adapt. They said, no, we don't need to adapt. We're doing great, right? Kodak invented the digital camera.
Yeah.
Oops. They said, no, we sell film. The digital camera is bad for us. We don't want to pursue it. Oops. You know, BlackBerry was dominated. They had more than 60% of the cell phone market worldwide, and then came the iPhone, and BlackBerry was like, no, this is the buttons on our phone. That's why people love it, the buttons, you know? And it took them a while to make a phone that was like an iPhone. It was too late. Adapt or die, literally, you know? And it's the same, the message said that came in. If someone in your family passes away, you have to adapt to that reality. You can't keep living like they're still alive.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If you have a new child, imagine this. You have a child born and you try to keep living the way you were living before your child was born. Your child will die. You know, it at the most basic level, it's not complicated. You have to constantly adapt in order to deal. You know, climate change is, we didn't even talk when we were talking about farms and stuff, right? Climate change is going to devastate the way that farming happens if people don't adapt. If you move to a new city, you have to adapt the way you live from where the city you used to live in. You have to get new friends. You have to have a different job. You know, it happens so much that we don't even notice it a lot of the time. The difference is when we don't adapt and when things are forcing us to adapt, you know, this is why there's 50 to 55% of the world having burnout now at work, right? It's because people are not able to adapt fast enough to what's demanded of them. And that's really the source of it. So adaptability solves everything. It literally is the solution to everything because, like you said, it's the key to survival. So when we apply it in business, back to the topic we started with, right? When we apply it in business, it literally solves, you know, a large chunk of problems that happen in business. If you are more adaptable, you'll find a solution when you don't have one.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, again, it's the skill of the skills because it adapts to itself. It gives you the basics for its own growth. It's kind of like its own virus. You know, adaptability is a virus of its own, except it's hopefully not a very unhealthy one. It's a healthy virus. You know,
we hear quite a lot of calls. Let's talk to Tabang in Sebokeng. Yes. Hey, Tabang.
Graups, how are you?
I'm very good, Tabang. What's on your mind, sir?
I'm fine. Graupsman, last year I became visually impaired.
Oh, I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry.
Yeah. You, so I think two little ways, Graups.
Yeah.
I consider adaptation as an output of being able to accept and to acknowledge.
Mm.
If you can accept and acknowledge, definitely there'll be an adaptation. So those are my three little...
Absolutely. Beautiful stuff,
yeah,
Tabang.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this question, Tabang.
Okay, bro.
Do you think there are certain things that as communities we are unable to accept and therefore adapt our...
They are, bro. Okay. I think... also surrounding influence that a good support structure can ease the process of being able to adapt.
I love the fact that you talk about acceptance. There's a very interesting sort of dimension to the way that you speak of adaptability. You talk of acceptance. What did that mean? What does that mean for you, Tabang?
If situation is beyond you, I mean, you must accept, perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can tell you I'm only getting the visit during the day.
Yes.
I'm living by myself. I can earn a shirt, you won't believe that is, I did that.
Yes.
Then people will always ask me, surely you don't see. Because I've accepted and I'm being able to adapt.
Wow.
I do stuff for myself, you know. So I think acceptance, as I said, being able to accept and to acknowledge that this is my situation, then you'll adapt.
Tabang, great call. Much appreciated. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Acceptance as a key component of adaptation, Mike?
It's a beautiful thing. And I mean, they do say that people, when they lose a sense like sight, other senses sharpen, right? That's a form of adapting. I mean, it's acceptance. It's a beautiful, beautiful thought because it's really like about how we have to take in what is happening to us and adapt to it instead of trying to force ourselves on it, right? And I applying it to the way that I've used adaptability in training with companies, you know, we look at how do we approach the problem for where the problem wants to be solved. How do we have a challenge? How do we go to where the challenge is and shift ourselves to meet that? So I think that's what, you know, he's talking about a lot of that acceptance of, okay, I can't change the situation. How do I adapt to the situation? You know, it becomes a great strength to be soft and flexible. We have a lot of calls. Let's get another one.
We've just lost the call. Here's the question. To what extent does the way that we have been socialized, educated, a form of education and socialization that was relevant and I suppose valuable at a particular time, to what extent can that kind of education and socialization be the very thing that makes us unable to adapt? Because at a certain point in time, it was relevant and it worked. So for example, if somebody were to say to the guy who who invented the engine, for example, the self-combusting engine, if that person was speaking to the people that used the horse and buggy, they probably would have been thinking in terms of more horses, right? And that's probably why we say, you know, an engine has got more horsepower. But instead of thinking about the power that comes from a self-combusting engine, right? To what extent does the way that we have been thinking that has made us successful in the past could be an impediment for our adaptation?
Well, it's spot on, Aubrey. That's exactly the point. When Toffler wrote Future Shock, he said, and he was quoting other people in this, it wasn't just him, he said that it was the biggest change in human history. And this was 50 years ago again, remember, and it seems like it's really taken us a long time to get the memo. Because he predicted within 20 years this would all change, and it's still not really done. But the change in human history was that until that time, everything about success had been about do things the way you're taught and do that well, and you'll succeed, right?
Yeah.
And it was the first time.
Go to school, get your matric, get your degree, you'll succeed.
Yeah, and do things. And when you get your job, learn, apprentice, right? Learn how to do it the way from a master, how they do it, and then do it like them. And if you can do it as well as them, then you can become a master, right? And that was the way we did things from the beginning of time. And what he said in 50 years ago, 1970, when the book was published, was that's changing now. Now that is death, adapt or die. You know, you have to adapt. You have to become skilled at not doing things the way it was done before. And they called this the biggest change, you know, since we crawled out of the ocean and became mammals, you know, like it was fundamentally different way of living. And the problem is, like you just alluded to, I mean, one of the many problems we struggle with still around adaptability is where our schooling systems, our societal structures, the way work works, you know, in a lot of ways has not yet changed, and it needs to adapt. It hasn't adapted, you know, and that's the problem, is that the demands are there, but the structures are still old in a lot of times, in a lot of ways, and that needs to shift. It's going to be forced to shift. You know, it's being forced. And that's why adaptability is the skill of the year, because we're in the year where we've declared that we're going to make it happen now. So let's make it happen. Now, the interesting thing, just to give us some insight, and maybe we have to continue this next time I visit you, because there's a lot here. But the basic three ways that the adaptability quotient, right, which is a recent invention, like an intelligent quotient, like IQ and EQ. Now we have AQ, and the AQ is structured in a specific way that involves three things: looking at skills, right? What do we have to know? How to adapt? How do we learn how to adapt? Then there's the character traits, you know, what kind of people are easily adaptable. And then there's the environment traits, right? What kind of a workplace is adaptable? What kind of a context that you're in helps you to adapt or encourages you to adapt? And when we measure the level of your adaptability and how successful you are at it, we can do it with some surgical precision, because there's 17 different elements that are measured in the AQ, and to show you, okay, yeah, you know, you're pretty good at adapting yourself as a human being, but your skills aren't so good.
Yeah.
You know, your level of determination or your level of persistence and grit are high, but your sort of outlook on your mindset around adaptability, you don't see its importance, or you're scared to take risks. You know, so you can actually see surgically where the human is getting their adaptability skills from and where they're failing. And that makes something you can learn, which is why it's a skill, right?
I'm reminded of a conversation I had yesterday about entrepreneurship with a guest of mine. And I asked the question, are we asking the right questions whenever we devise programs and curricula for developing entrepreneurs? Because I'm sort of hung up on the idea that entrepreneurs aren't people necessarily that must be passing tests. Entrepreneurs are people that must think a particular way. Entrepreneurs are people that must have a particular type of cosmology. They've got to be in the midst of all of the scarcity, they've got to be thinking in terms of abundance. They've got to be in the scarce, in the midst of when we're thinking in terms of problems and challenges, they've got to be thinking in terms of opportunity. And I don't know whether that's something that you can teach in the way that our universities and our colleges teach, right? Because the way, the orientation ultimately is so that we are able to pass a test rather than be able to apply. And I wonder to what extent is adaptability a way of changing the way that we think rather than changing the way that we do.
Mike? Well, it is actually changing the way, in my definition, it's changing the way that we be.
Okay.
Right? Changing the way that we think is actually, the way I look at that, that's creativity, right? At the source of our thinking is who we are. And one of the hardest things is to change who we are, right? Because we're convinced that who we are is somehow naturally just that way. That Aubrey is the way he is because that's who he is. He's Aubrey.
Yeah.
And however I would describe you, that's kind of how you are. How you think is a little bit changed because you kind of conceptually can get that you can think differently. But being differently at your core, but the way you are, who you are, is the source of your thoughts, right?
Yeah.
Your thoughts come from you.
Yeah.
So for me, adaptability is the fundamental core of creativity, of innovation, because adaptability is the core of shifting who you are so that you can think differently, creativity, so that you can act differently, innovation, right? And so when you talk about entrepreneurship there, it's absolutely fundamental. You know, like I mentioned before, there's a Japanese businessman, a CEO of Rakuten, Hiroshi Mikitani, said that business is the most creative act because you're creating something that never existed. But also, not only are you creating something that never existed, you must continue to constantly adapt it. You know, what it is, not just what it does, what it is, because it must adapt to the changing needs of the market, right? Apple is not the same company it was when it launched. It doesn't have the same products. It doesn't have the same, there's some kind of DNA that's the same there, but it has to constantly adapt over time. And that's why business is so, you know, creative, adaptable of an entity. And that's why entrepreneurship may be the most, you know, in demand of adaptability of all, because it must, you know, it also is agile. It's quicker to adapt an entrepreneurial entity, right? Because it's generally much smaller than a giant corporation. So it's easier to adapt because, you know, adapting a 5,000 or 20,000 person companies is a lot harder, right? Because there's a lot more people that you have to get shift.
Is it essentially changing what it is, or is it changing? Because I mean, if our thoughts come from me, and your definition of adaptability is changing me, really changing the me from whence the thoughts come. Is there a me?
Oh, now you're introducing that question at 59 past.
I'm sorry, man.
roll that one into the next.
Let's roll it into the next conversation, because I think you're onto something here that we need to think about. To say that we need to really, really understand who me is, from whence my thoughts come, from whence I'm going to have to change if I'm going to adapt, not just be creative, but really adapt. So, Michael Lee, as we close, your final word?
We are going to be doing an adaptability thing for World Creativity Week. We're going to be going around doing it for entrepreneurs. We're going to be doing it for companies. So if people want to see more about that, then come to our website, which is Innotivity, Innotivity, Institute.com. Or just look me up on LinkedIn, which is usually easier, because we're going to do this adaptability roadshow, adapt to inspire. and like look at how you could be more adaptable and stuff. And then hopefully next month, Aubrey, I come back and visit. Well, let's get to your question that you asked.
Let's get to it. Michael Lee, multiple TEDx speaker. Thank you so much for joining us and discussing the issue of adaptability.